SCP-8066, Phobophobia, the only thing to fear. Practically everybody, except for Daredevil, I suppose, is afraid of something, whether it be spiders, or death, or public speaking. To speak more broadly, then, practically every human is capable of becoming afraid. And there are likely situations or scenarios that could nearly universally strike fear into people's hearts. The theme for the SCP Wiki's 2024 October anthology is phobias, and 8066 specifically is about the phobia of phobias, the fear of fear itself. It revolves then around a creature devoted to being the epitome of fear, and what it might be capable of if it achieved that. Let's take a look. Before we get into SCP-8066, we first have to go over SCP-2006, an anomalous spherical entity whose stated goal is to cause feelings of fear and horror in as many humans as possible. To do this, it possesses the ability to change its shape, mass, volume, density, chemical structure, and voice to any form that it desires. There's also no known way to damage 2006, and its shape-shifting abilities are thought to be unlimited, making it potentially one of the most catastrophic SCPs in the archive. Of course, so far it has proven to be an incredibly poor judge of what causes fear in humans, as well as human emotions in general, and it has demonstrated a fondness for taking on forms of various entities from classic horror and science fiction movies. Its most common form has been that of Ro-Man from the 1953 movie Robot Monster. Also, after attempting to scare someone, it will then become quite affable and friendly with them, stating that it just scares people because it's fun, and it's the best at it. Despite its overall ineffectiveness at scaring humans, a site director has noted that if it began to understand what really frightens people, combined with its unlimited shape-shifting abilities, it would become a very serious problem. That brings us to SCP-8066. Which first describes SCP-2006 as a humanoid entity with the appearance of a human woman in her mid to late 30s, noted as not appearing to possess any anomalous attributes following an incident. The incident took place on September 3rd, 2024, at 2:01 a.m., at which time several instances of anomalous phenomena simultaneously took place across Site 118. In 2006 containment cell, it was watching the 1959 horror film The Tingler for the sixth time in a row, while assuming the form of the Gill Man from Creature from the Black Lagoon. It mumbled softly to itself before its cell began to shake slightly, and the lights dimmed. A distant rumbling sound is heard, and the camera feed cuts out as 2006 looks up. The site's security system received two frames of video in immediate succession, the first showing 2006 dark cell lit only by the television screen set to static. Its chair has been shattered, and a humanoid figure with indistinct features is huddled in the far corner of the room. A second figure is hanging upside down from the ceiling over the screen. The second frame shows the cell as being even darker, with the only light coming from the TV and illuminating a human figure reaching towards it. 2 minutes later, the cell's camera feed is re-established, and 2006 is seen still sitting in the chair, watching the film as if nothing happened, but it is now in human form. The movie continues playing, and eventually 2006 becomes aware of its altered form, appearing confused and upset, as it is seemingly unable to change its shape. A short time later, 2006 starts to weep. It's later interviewed by the site director, Dr. Owings, who approaches it as it's slumped in its chair, staring at nothing. The television is paused midway through the 1947 film, Scared to Death. When Owings enters the cell, it jerks out of its stupor, initially believing him to be its regular interviewer, but disappointed to find out that it's not. It asks if she's sick, but he tells it that she's fine, and everyone's fine. It then says that it might be sick, as it hasn't been able to change the way it looks for days. It's been stuck looking like some lady, and not even a monster lady like Dracula's daughter or the Bride of Frankenstein or anything. Owings wonders if that's why it hasn't done anything to frighten him, as he was sure it was going to do something truly blood-curdling, like sneaking up behind him and shouting boo. 2006 simply shrugs and says that its heart isn't in it anymore, so he asks if it's noticed anything else while it's been sick. 2006 replies that it feels shivery and hot and cold and like it wants to hide under the bed, which Owings surmises to be fear. 2006 says that it is scared of whatever did this to it, and it's scared that it's just getting started. That moves us on to a separate document detailing SCP-8066, which has the object class of SCOTOS, meaning an object that severely lacks research and documentation. 8066 is the collective designation for anomalous phenomena surrounding Dr. Randall Owings, director of Site 118 and the Department of Phobology. The cause of these anomalies is currently unknown. In another incident, Owings and Deputy Site Director Price are walking through the site's Keter containment section, with Price asking how prepared they are for Halloween this year. Owings replies that it's difficult to say, as fear exists within the unknown and the unexpected, and fearful things flock to this season like maggots to a corpse. They move on to discussing some other site business while walking past containment cells, until Owings suddenly stops and looks back. He asks if they've had any layout shifts recently, as Site 118 is located in a shifting facility beneath a desert, but they haven't. He then asks where SCP-106's cell went, the old man, but Price doesn't know what he's talking about. Owings can't believe that she doesn't know what SCP-106 is, stating that it's a teleporting, matter-corroding mass murderer that they used SCP-2006 to trap here back in 1961. As Owings speaks, Price's eyes glaze over, and her hands tighten on the clipboard before relaxing. She then says that she spaced out for a moment, and mentions that he was saying something about Halloween preparations. After determining that Price was no longer capable of remembering SCP-106, Owings contacted Agent Benedict Lugosi, their chief of security, requesting him to check on 106's internal camera feed. Upon hearing about 106, Lugosi began displaying confusion and short-term memory loss, similar to that experienced by Price. Since it seemed that communication regarding 106 was currently untenable, Owings went to his office to view 106's internal feed directly. He discovered that all recorded footage prior to September 1st, 2024, appeared to have been deleted prematurely due to a system error. All footage after that point showed the same thing, a clean white room, devoid of corrosion or the substance that forms around 106, and with a missing door. 106 is seen lying in the center of the room, curled into the fetal position, whimpering quietly and with its eyes tightly squeezed shut. Owings notes that he currently believes SCP-8066 to be some kind of roaming anti-meme that came into contact with 106. Even the new artificial intelligence they installed recently appears to be affected by it. He suspects that his immunity to it comes from his unusually high cognitive resistance value and the Nestic supplements they give to all high-clearance personnel. He'll be sending this document to the Anti-Mimetics Division to see if a cure for the effects can be synthesized quickly, because if 106's emotional state returns to normal while it's still anti-mimetic, they'll have no defense against it. On September 3rd, at 2:01 a.m., several instances of anomalous phenomena took place across Site 118. The Delta Wing experienced minor tremors and a distant rumbling sound for 14 seconds, neither of which were experienced by other wings. Approximately 100 kilograms of desiccated snake skins slid out of various air vents around Beta Wing, and the corpse of an unidentified man manifested beneath Dr. Owen's desk. It vanished 66 seconds later, but its stench lingered for several more hours. Also, as mentioned previously, SCP-2006 lost all anomalous attributes. Owens notes that at first he assumed these phenomena to be unrelated to 8066, as unexplainable things happen all the time here. When he tried to talk about getting the snake skins cleared up, however, he found that nobody could understand him, and he realized that 8066 may be a significantly larger problem than initially estimated. On September 6th, Owens departed from Site 118 with the intention of picking up a number of personal effects from his house, so that he could more easily live on site until the issue of 8066 had been resolved. Upon reaching his house, he discovered that the front door had been forced open and left ajar. Since several similar break-ins had recently occurred in the area, Owens initially believed the incident to be non-anomalous in nature, so he called local authorities to report it. He gives the dispatcher the address, stating that they messed the place up pretty bad, broke some windows, tipped the TV over, and for some reason cut all the faces out of the framed photos, which he remarks as being unsettling. The dispatcher replies that they're sorry to hear that, Mr. Owens, and he's about to correct them to say that he's a doctor, before realizing that he never gave his name. He hears the sound of a loud, muffled thump from upstairs, as the dispatcher says they'll be with him shortly, followed by rapid thumping as something quickly descends the stairs. Owens fled the premises before he could come into contact with the source of the noise, and an attempted report to the Foundation revealed that this anomalous event was a manifestation of 8066. Owens notes that he's been making too many assumptions, as he thought the common thread with 8066 was Site 118, and he just happened to be psychologically resistant enough to notice it. He realizes now that the common thread with it is himself, and it's only affecting the site because he's there. He just doesn't know why. Starting on September 13th, at 4:04 p.m., Site 118 began experiencing irregular blackouts in seemingly random sections of the complex. The extent of the blackouts is unclear, since the site is vast and only Owens is currently capable of reporting them. In the event that a blackout prevents exit from the complex, a portable generator and a large supply of food and water has been stored in Owens' office. Owens notes that when he was a child, he was afraid of the dark. It was a little problematic, as his parents worked long nights and left him to shut the lights off when it was time for bed. He was convinced that if he lingered in the dark for even a moment, some terrible creature would attack him. It became a ritual each night to turn off the lights before rushing up the stairs as quickly as he could to hurl himself into bed, certain that the monster's grasping claws were only inches away. Each blackout here feels like that to him, but now there's nowhere to run. In another incident, Owens writes that Dr. Price's appearance has been subtly changing over time, and every time he looks at her, something slightly changed. Her hair is a slightly lighter shade, or her nose is a little smaller, or her glasses are of a marginally different make. It's only been 15 days since this all started, and she already looks like an entirely different person. He wouldn't even know it was her if everyone else wasn't recognizing her like nothing is wrong. He's going to be looking through old photos of the rest of the staff to see if anyone else has changed, and he's going to lock access to this page from anyone without level 5 clearance. He also notes that he's going to disregard Foundation documentation guidelines for the time being, as it isn't worth the effort if no one else is going to read it. At some point in the afternoon of September 19th, he was in the front seat of his car in the site's parking lot. He had no intention of driving anywhere, as it's a good hour and a half trip to reach anything from Site 118. More and more of his colleagues were becoming unrecognizable, and he needed a few moments alone to be able to stop pretending for a second. He didn't intend to stay there for longer than the duration of a lunch break, but he hasn't been sleeping well recently, and he must have passed out. When he woke, it had become night, and there was a body strapped into the passenger seat beside him. In the gloom, he couldn't make out much of its features, and all that stood out was the cloudy whites of its eyes and its lolling head, staring at him. There were other things outside of the car, too, with shadowy, vaguely humanoid shapes passing between the cars and the parking lot, softly hissing like gas leaks. When one passed right by him, he could feel a chill emanating off of it, like a walking freezer. He fled the moment he found an unbroken path from the car to the site's entrance, and he may have been chased, but he was too preoccupied with running and being scared out of his mind to get a proper sense of his surroundings. He raced to the elevator, only slowing down to flash his identification to the guard at the front door. When the door shut and it started to descend, he nearly collapsed. He was so overwrought at the time that he only noticed as he was nearing his stop that the button for the ground floor was missing. It had disappeared from all of the elevators, and the stairwells were gone entirely. Now, there really was nowhere to run. He also notes that personnel seem particularly uneasy now, with nobody talking about the situation or doing anything to try to fix it. It's possible that SCP-8066 was never anti-mimetic at all, but rather mimetic, being tied to the anomaly on a conceptual level. Perhaps anyone aware of it becomes unable to say or do anything that acknowledges its existence. Either unable or too afraid. As of September 23rd, however, the situation has worsened significantly. The ongoing blackouts are no longer temporary affairs, with large swaths of the complex having ceased operation entirely. Though heat and air circulation on Owing's floor is still currently functional, they've lost all light, and he's only been able to use his computer by hooking it up to the portable generator. He's seen things, too, when some of the security cameras still worked. Shadows, like from the parking lot, but more agitated, with sharper, flickering edges. He can hear them when they pass by his office, scraping air like radio static. He doesn't know what happened to the anomalies they were containing here, but presumably nothing's left to keep them caged. He hasn't seen or heard anything of them, and he's not sure if that's a comfort or not. He wants to go home. On September 28th, he accidentally cuts his arm open, trying to open the packaging on some rations. He thought he'd start bleeding, but he didn't. Nothing was there, and he was just empty inside. Why is it empty inside? And why doesn't it hurt? Later, Owings writes that he's had a lot of time to think while trapped in his office. There isn't much else to do when you're lying in the dark, waiting to die. He's been thinking about useless things mostly, looping through the same thoughts over and over, worrying at them like a rotting tooth. He's been thinking about the departments here, such as phobology, counter-ontokinetics, and nomenclature. They're names that most people wouldn't recognize, and names are so important in a place like this. Names have power, and that's why he's always been so particular about titles, being referred to as Dr. Owings instead of Mr. or just Randall. Site 118 is a place where names have tangible weight, and he is, or was, the man that controls it. The director of Site-118 can't allow himself to be named so easily, not without consequence, and his colleagues all knew this. So how did SCP-2006 ever learn his first name? On October 10th, Owens is sitting at his desk, typing, when he suddenly stops, looking up at the office's security camera. He notices that the computer is automatically transcribing the room's security feed into the document in real time. Something thumps on the door to the office, startling him, and it thumps again and again. He wants to move, but he cannot, frozen by fear. He feels as though a great hand is pressing down on his chest, rooting him to the floor. The door slowly creaks open, although Owens can't see anything beyond the threshold. He hears a voice greeting him by name, and he and his chair begin sinking into the floor, but he barely notices, as he can't take his eyes off of the black pit of the door. He asks if that's SCP-2006, and the response is some quiet laughter as something ripples in the dark. The voice replies that it is. Or it was. Owens shivers, now sunk into the floor down to his waist, as the voice says that it's just some old skin it left behind, shed when it became too big for a body. A terrible comprehension begins to dawn in Owens' eyes, and his breath shudders, with the floor now up to his chest. Owens begins panicking, as the voice tells him that it's too big to see now, but it can see, and it can show him. Owens continues to plead with it until his mouth sinks below the floor, and the voice assures him that it's okay if he's afraid, as they'll look together. We're then given a third version of the document, this time going back to describing SCP-2006, which now has the Megiddo object class, explained as meaning that it's half past too late. The description states that SCP-2006 is, followed by 2006 is an anomalous spherical entity, it's holding a box, and it's listening closely. It states that it's Keter, it's a low-quality horror science fiction movie, and it's expressing fear and surprise. It's the mighty Roman, the monster from the Black Lagoon, the Bride of Frankenstein, Vincent Price, and Harlan Ellison. It's a law of nature. It's afraid, and it's already here. It then repeats multiple times that SCP-2006 is. The containment procedures state that all subjects are to stay in their boxes, and all boxes and things that are not boxes are to be held very close. The first subject listed is Deputy Site Director Verity Price, with her box being Site 118. The document is written more like prose than a typical SCP article, stating that Price is finishing an expense report in her cramped little office when Owens appears in her doorway and tells her that he needs to show her something. She glances up, asking if it's important, as she needs to get this finished before midnight. He just repeats himself and drags himself into the office, visibly limping. His speech has a slurred quality, like he's not sure how to form the syllables. In the gloom of her office, she can barely make out his expression. Her mouth goes dry as he lurches forward, looming like a horrible monument, and she asks what this is all about. He tells her again to come here as he enters the lamplight, and she finally sees that he doesn't have any eyes. His sockets are empty pits, and looking into them, she feels a wave of nausea and vertigo, like she's about to fall in. He grabs her by the arm, his fingers digging in painfully. On sudden, terrified impulse, she takes the lamp with her other hand and slams it into the side of his head. There's barely any resistance, as the left hemisphere of his head caves in like papier-mâché, like it's just skin with nothing inside it. His grip doesn't loosen, and he just repeats that he needs to show her something. Suddenly, more people flood into the office, each eyeless and grasping, repeating the same horrible demand. When they force her to the ground and start the laborious process of hollowing her out, she can still hear it. Researcher Joe Lowe is the next subject, her box being Labyrinth, the anomalous complex where Site 118 is located. Through an impossible tangle of corridors and passageways, she's running. Something is chasing her, and she can't see it, but she can feel its rasping breath on the back of her neck, only a hand's breadth behind her. Her lungs burn, her legs ache, and as she runs, the walls change. Smooth beryllium bronze gives way to rusting iron, which turns to concrete, then unhewn stone. The walls close in, narrowing, and she is forced to press herself through thinner and thinner gaps, scraping away layers of skin with each convolution. And still, she pushes forward, as she has no other choice. The corridors narrow yet further, and now the crack of bone is heard as the researcher shoves herself through spaces that a human body should not be able to fill. Skin shreds and muscles rupture, and Joe wishes, in vain, to scream. The next subject is SCP-106, its box being a clean and lovely place. There is an elderly janitor whose back is stooped, his ashen skin is withered, and his uniform is so filthy as to be nearly black. Dark, Icarus fluid drips from his nostrils to tarnish the pristine white tiles beneath his frayed boots. The overseer says, "Wipe that up," and he does. The overseer says, "Clean the bathrooms," and he obeys, even as his touch dissolves the pipes of the toilets, sending torrents of contaminated water across the floor. The overseer says, "Be happy," and he smiles. He is happy. The clean place overflows with a pure, searing light that he can see even when he presses his palms over his eyes. There are 1,000 rooms to tend to, and each room crowds with colorless people. They are loud and smiling with lacquered teeth, and the light passes through them like cold wind. The overseer says, "Be happy," and the old man bites clean through his lower lip with the force of his grin. Dr. Eugene Japper's box is the desecrated sanctuary, SCP-4000, and the thing that calls itself Eugene Japper's wakes up lashed to a long table in the forest, where singing is no longer heard. There are figures crowded around the table, chattering to one another excitedly and jostling for a space, like guests at a fantastic feast. Eugene opens his mouth to possibly negotiate or beg for mercy, but no words come out. Instead, a name crawls up his throat and out of his mouth, glistening and beetle-winged. The host of the party plucks the name from his swollen lips and bites down on it, chewing leisurely. A guest asks how it tastes, visibly drooling, and the host replies that it's tart, and it'll try another. It wipes its mouth with its sleeve, smearing name juice, and asks for a blade. Someone passes it a chipped cleaver, which it holds up to the light, showing the dull blade. It meets Eugene's eyes for the first time, and grins, like they're sharing a private joke, and it asks what they think the rest will taste like. It then reaches down and cuts off Eugene's left index finger, causing names to begin to trickle out of the newly formed stump. Eugene opens his mouth to cry out in pain, but no sound comes out, Instead, even more names come scrabbling up his throat, fluttering and ink-stained. The guests take this as their cue to eat, each grasping for a name as the host continues to cut away at Eugene's hand. Next, the middle finger, then ring finger, then pinky, and finally the thumb. Eugene breathes heavily, sodden with sweat. Names dribble out of the corner of his mouth. Someone is saying something, but the words haze together. The pain is too much, and he cannot bear it. The host then reaches for his right hand. The last subject is Dr. Randall Owings, whose box is home. There's a box at the center of the universe, and it is full of meat. Randall Owings suspends from the ceiling like a butchered animal, dangling on his own glistening cords. His head lolls, the air swelters, and everything reeks of iron and bile. Huge veins that are corroded pipes, that are filth-streaked glass tubes, run along every possible surface, all coming to meet at some pulsating nexus above Randall's head, just beyond his range of vision. When he squints, he can see something moving beneath the skin of the vein pipes, shapeless and terrible. Fear, in its most undiluted form. Something touches the crown of his skull and travels downward. A pair of serpents that are hypodermic needles that are long, wormy tendrils. When they reach the edge of his brow, they turn and rear back before plunging into his eyes. Randall shivers and seizes like a man electrocuted, mouth gaping without sound. The things in his head caress his optical nerve, and impossible colors flash across his non-vision. He feels as though magma is bubbling behind his temples, threatening to burst through. Then the needles sink into both hemispheres of his brain. We're given an image of a man with his hands somehow inside of his face, but his eyes are visible and wide. The caption reads, "Every box opens over and over." Reality is made of intimate tortures, and he sees them all, individually and at once. It is terror without release, suffering without death. A nightmare without end. Tears stream down his face, and something touches his cheek very gently. A voice asks Randall if he's scared, and he starts to scream. The world screams with him. So, basically, SCP-2006 finally seemed to learn what actually scares humanity. And it's not campy movies from the 50s. How exactly it learned this is not really clear, except that it seemed to have happened after a power outage in its cell. This resulted in 2006 taking the form of a woman with apparently no anomalous traits and no interest in scaring people, which is later implied to be cast-off skin that 2006 shed when it learned how to really scare people. It's then suggested at the end that 2006 has gone global, terrorizing all of humanity in a perpetual cycle of endless fear. It is, in some ways, a predictable article, insofar as following up on the warning issued in 2006's article, but that doesn't mean that seeing a threat come to fruition can't be satisfying. They say that the only thing to fear is fear itself. So that's what SCP-2006 became.